What's wrong with you people?
Welcome to Not Another Allergy Podcast. My name is Matt Hensley, and I am joined by Kyle Bierman, and we both sound delightful with all of the allergies in the air there in Lubbock or here in Irving, Texas. But we're back, and you know who is not back, Kyle Bierman?
The Houston Astros, who are in dead last, not in the American League. I believe they are second to last in the American League, because the White Sox have won three games so far. The
difference between us and the White Sox is we're like leading, this is what's wild, we're leading the league in hits, and that's what's wild to me. The problem is we refuse to do that if there's anybody on base. It's like, on base? Okay, I'll just stand there and just, you know, whatever. Anyway, I'm coping.
Let's hate on White Sox for a little bit. The White Sox are 3-21 right now. Like, they are on pace to blow the worst record in Major League history out of the water. I believe
they already set a record, though, I think, with the most shutouts or something in a certain span. I don't know, like 12 shutouts or something.
I would apologize to any White Sox fans who listen, but if you're a White Sox fan, you deserve it. So I'm sorry.
There's the other side of, I literally do not know a White Sox fan. I can point out my friends list, friends of every team.
It's kind of like the Mets, right? Like you don't really know anybody that cheers for them. You know that they exist. They have a great ballpark, but yeah, I don't know anyone who's
and
like
their City Connect jerseys that look exactly like the throwback, like New York Yankee jerseys. Kyle, did you know? You didn't until I sent you this link, that a recent Lifeway research study found that most Hispanic Protestant pastors in the U.S. conduct worship services in Spanish. Shocking, right? 69% would conduct worship services in Spanish. However, 18% lead all bilingual services. 12% have separate services for Spanish, English, and or bilingual. And 2% lead worship services and all English. So that's some recent research out of Lifeway. And because here in Plymouth Park, every few weeks, few months or whatever, we do a combined Spanish-English worship services. We did that actually on Easter, where we did the sermon in English and Spanish and had a wonderful time with that. And for May the 5th, we are going to have a bilingual service at our church. And so that just was on my mind as I went to Lifeway and we were going to find our, you know, article to discuss and so forth. And I thought that would be a timely one for us to maybe dig into as we get closer. So, number one, and this we'll put in the show notes if you're interested in finding more about it, or maybe would like to try that in your church. But number one, you got to define your context.
Yeah.
Number one, that is also on the Spanish side. Is this who you're targeting? Is your target group going to be first, second, third generation immigrants? Because that is going to play a piece in maybe how you need to go about it. What is that dominant culture or the language in the home of the people you are trying to reach? And the author, Mark Smith, is actually a guy that's able to lead in both Spanish and English. And so he translates himself and all of that good stuff. But let's talk about that a little bit. Why do you need to know your context, Kyle?
Well, look, this is true whether you are looking for, you know, looking to go to a bilingual service or at a Spanish service or a Korean service or whatever. Like, you need to know the demographic of the people who live in your church or live around your church. You need to know this regardless, right? if you're in a church as a pastor and you have not done like a demographic study, you should do that like as soon as possible. NAM has a free demographic study that you can request. Lots of state conventions have partnerships with organizations like Mission Insight, where you can get very detailed breakdowns of your context. And that's the thing. If you're going to lead a church in a community, you need to be intimately familiar with the details of that community, right? Beyond just languages, like you need to know what is, like what's the socioeconomic status of your community? What, how many single moms versus married couples do you have in your community? All those things are so important as you lead, because it's going to help you tailor ministries to meet needs in your community.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what you can do is you can come up with some really good ideas for ministries that will absolutely not connect with your local context whatsoever.
You have to exegete your culture, as we talked about. You have to be a missionary there. Think about, what is the area around my church? And so if the area around my church is rural, country-loving, you know, cowboys working on the farm all day, that's probably not your context that you're going to start a, you know, a rock and roll worship service. Like, you got to know your area a little bit. And so in the case of, so Plymouth Park is in an area that is predominantly Hispanic. And so we have to, of course, as a church, to reflect that in our worship, reflect that in our staff, reflect that in what we are doing and what we're offering. So that ultimately gets to then speak into some of the things that we want to do. Gospel's not changing. We're not changing anything like that, but we are trying to apply it to that context in such a way that we can actually reach the people around us.
And here's the one thing that I would say. It is highly unlikely that, regardless of where you are, that the culture of your community is monocultural, right? You, more than likely, you have a multicultural, multi-ethnic community very close to your church.
Yeah.
That's the world that we live in right now, right? There are no really monocultural communities, very, very few of those left. So you're going to have to figure out some way, if you're not already doing so, to develop a multicultural ministry, because that's your community.
Number two, clarify your vision. Again, all of this kind of stuff, I would say, we could apply to anything you're trying to do in a church. You got to know your culture, you got to clarify your vision, all of that kind of stuff. But what the author talks about is bilingual worship is not simply taking, you know, your four or five songs and doing half of them in Spanish, or doing a Spanish verse and then a message and translating it or whatever. That's obviously part of it. And you know, that's going to be part of what you're doing if you're doing a, you know, bilingual service. But it's also engaging with a ethnic group in your community that is different from you. And he talks about the selection of the first deacons in Acts 6. They wanted to intentionally minister to the Greek-speaking widows, so they chose seven Greek men, at least those with Greek names, to lead the ministry. And so there was a representation from that marginalized group that was going to influence future decisions and directions. And so we have to think about, what is the long-term vision for creating bilingual worship in your church? What is it, something that we want to permeate the church? Is this just something we want to do occasionally? Do we want to be a little more separate but distinct but together? Or do we want to be all in one family and try and make it work? And that leads into number three. You have to count the cost. That might not be popular for everybody in your own church, you know, the church, the people, the members that you already have. You have to, this might not be something on day one that you say, hey, starting next week, we are going to do this for the foreseeable future, because you may have some people vote by their seats and not be there. So you do need to count the cost. Kyle, talk about count the cost for us.
Yeah, well, I mean, this goes back to any change that you're going to make in a church, right? You've got to figure out what is the, you need to take some sort of assessment of the collateral damage that you could do by making this change, right? And that doesn't mean that you don't move forward making the change, but you need to be aware of it. And you need to, and I think by preparing yourself for opposition, preparing yourself for some kickback, you can kind of answer some of those objections and questions, hopefully on the front end, before they blow out of proportion, right? So yeah, you need, I mean, if this is a conviction that you come to, that, man, we need to, in order to reach our community, we need to have some bilingual programming, some bilingual worship, then you need to begin to communicate that, right? I would not say you just need to spring this on your people like on a Sunday morning, all of a sudden start singing a verse in Spanish and just let them go with it. No, you need to communicate the vision behind why the change is necessary, right? We believe this will help us reach our community more effectively, reach the people in our community more effectively. And then you go slowly as you work through that.
I hadn't really thought of what he concludes that section with before, but he says adding a bilingual worship as a second service option is often less costly than only having one bilingual worship service. You know, celebrate what the church is doing and remind your congregation of the vision because it will stretch your leadership and your people. So that might be an option too, is think about, hey, if this is something that's going on, maybe I'm not changing the main service, but we want to start to move in that direction. Yeah. One of those easy ways perhaps to do it is maybe find some people that really believe in this and see the necessity of this, and let's say, hey, let's have a second service maybe at 9:30 or 8:45 or 10 or whatever, you know, time it could be, that's purely bilingual, and start from there and maybe see what that could lead to.
Yeah, that's good.
Number four, use technology wisely. Translatable to anything you're ever doing. But, you know, varying skill levels in your church, there's different models over the years where there's live translation from the platform, where you have paid volunteers transmitting to headphones. I've been a part of that before. You also have apps that can simultaneously interpret into another a language. But Kyle, what are some of your thoughts on using technology wisely?
I think you should just take, How Great Thou Art and throw it into Google Translate and then just throw those lyrics up on the screen.
That's what we're doing for the fifth. No, just kidding.
that would solve all the problems. No, yeah. Look, you technology, we have such cool technology today, right? Like the apps that simultaneously interpret in another language. Man, what a game changer. But you don't want that to be all that you do, right? Because you're not going to have any kind of a personal connection with folks who interact in a different language, right? You want to make sure that you are providing some resources to actually minister to them personally, right? And so if you're looking at starting, if you think, hey, we need to start a bilingual worship service, and you don't currently have anybody on your staff or in your church leadership that's bilingual, that's probably the first thing you need to do, right? Not just immediately lean on some technology, but you need to pursue someone who can help lead this ministry. And then you use technology to supplement those things.
All right. Number cinco, think through the translation. Right, we kind of tweaked this, how we did this on Easter. I was used to, saying, God's word says, and then waiting for, we just kind of ping-ponged very fast with very short phrases and so forth. And Israel, our Spanish pastor at the church, much preferred almost kind of paragraph or more thoughts. And so we would go, it was not necessarily sentence by sentence. Sometimes it was two sentences, but it was more kind of thoughts. And so it was a little longer translation, of course, but you were just not interrupting everything. There seemed to be a better flow. This guy is able to do bilingual messages on his own. So he's just kind of talking back and forth and translates live. And that's incredible. And I would like to see it done. That's not me. And will probably never be. I don't want to say never, but I think that's going to be a skill that I'm going to have to really work at hard. But we did it that way. But you need to think about that. But I want to point out that very last deal where it says maintain eye contact with the audience. This is what I've done the exact opposite of in every time I've done it. And that's probably because of my performance background with, music and some of that kind of stuff. When you're doing, duets and whatever, you're looking at the other person and so forth. And so it was like, he is risen. And then I turn to my left and just stare at the guy as he says, e recitato or whatever it was. It's like maintain eye contact, though, with the audience and avoid that tendency to look at the translator when they speak. And for somebody that uses a manuscript, this also helped me, is because I knew what I was, saying for the most part. But that would give me more time to kind of look at the crowd and make a little more eye contact and see also kind of how folks are engaging. But that's an encouragement he has there, is to maintain eye contact, not with the other speaker, but with the audience.
Yeah. And understand that the whoever is translating for you, if you're doing that way, you know, like you're preaching and someone's translating, they are not translating necessarily word for word, because word for word will not necessarily make sense in another language, right? We see this in our church. We have an ASL interpreter. So we have a pretty significant deaf population in our congregation. And sometimes our pastor, whose dad is deaf, so our pastor speaks sign language. I mean, he signs fluently, but he even sometimes he'll say something and you can tell that, like, the interpreter, she has to figure out how to communicate this thing that he just said, right? So especially if you're throwing out, like, you know, I don't know, colloquialisms or just kind of pithy sayings, like, you should probably talk through those with your translator, because they're not necessarily going to come off the way that it would to the English audience, right? And you don't want to alienate a bilingual audience, whether that's, you know, the deaf, whether that's Spanish, whatever. You want to make sure that what you're communicating is coming across the right way to them.
Yeah. Different, you know, there's stuff that we can say, and we would all know what we're talking about, you know, proof is in the pudding, or when the rubber meets the road, or whatever it may be, that you forget that there are other languages that are more literal or whatever it might be. Yeah. You may say something like, you know, it's raining like cats and dogs or something like that. And you just have to know the other context and write your stuff accordingly. Or obviously, let, as you're translating it and going back and forth, you know, find a better way for them to phrase it for them. And that kind of leads to number six, to develop your content bilingually. Like, you really have to think through that. Finally, number seven, and he saved this for last on purpose, music. Yeah. Here we go. So music. Some in bilingual, he says, think about singing a verse in a chorus in English and then in Spanish and then reverse and all of that kind of stuff. His encouragement is doing two songs in English, two songs in Spanish, in the case of an English-Spanish thing. You want to engage the entire congregation rather than having, you know, somebody with their heart language waiting their turn and so forth. And so it means it may be limited. There are other ways to do this. There's been times that in our church we would, you know, sing songs that had the same melody, same everything in the other language, and you just sang it in your language, and that was up on the screen. Yeah. And so you just kind of had two languages being sung at the same time. We've done the English verse, Spanish verse. I don't know. You know, certainly since I've been there, we haven't done one where it's like English only and then Spanish only. But Kyle, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so you want to hear a way that this was done really, really well. Several years ago, Chris Tomlin released what they called the World Edition of How Great Is Our God. Have you heard that? It is multilingual. Throughout the course of the song, they're doing multiple languages of How Great Is Our God. Really powerful. Again, you're probably not doing in a single worship service, you're probably not doing three or four languages. In fact, I think Matt and I would both say that's probably not something you want to do. But yeah, I like his idea of, you know, if you're doing a verse and a chorus in English and then do a verse and a chorus in Spanish, do a song in English, do a song in Spanish so that it's not, you're including everyone in the worship, right? And even folks who may not, so if you're doing Spanish, even folks who may not speak Spanish can sing the song, particularly if it's a hymn or a praise chorus that they know, and that can begin to actually help them understand some of the language. Man, beautiful. Yeah, if you haven't already done so, check out the world version of How Great Is Our God. Really cool recording there. And he also does this too. Don't just use Google Translate and try to sing it in Spanish.
Why not, plug it in.
So many reasons. Oh, so many reasons.
Well, hey, Guys, if you are in a context where this is important, you know, that kind of thing, if your context would offer something like this, try it. You know, certainly that option where, you know, maybe start a service separate from the main, where you can kind of get a feel for it, see what kind of traction it might get, that kind of a thing. But it is worthy. We have a wonderful time with it at ours. We have some, obviously, that don't like it. We have a ton that love it and look forward to the next time. It really does bring some unity in our church, though. And it's exciting to see and be a part of. And so it's fun. It's worth it. We encourage you to check it out. We'll put the link to this in the show notes if you want to read more about it. But have a wonderful day. And until next time, may your coffee be as black as night and as bold as the gospel you declare.
What's wrong with you people?